I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Georgia Tree. Welcome, Georgia.
Happy to be here.
Well, I'm really happy to be here, I'll tell you that, because I've just been reading your book about to be published, Old Boy, My Dad's Story of Addiction, Resurrection, Dumb Luck and Love. Fantastic. How do you feel?
It's been surreal, really, to have my work published, well, soon to be published, but I'm so glad that you read it and enjoyed it.
Well, I did enjoy it, and it for someone who's been sort of grown up around the traps in Perth and Fremantle and understands a bit of the history of the times, your story about your father's exploits and experiences and growing up and getting older, there are so many intersections, there are so many places that will remind people of their own lives if they grew up or spent a lot of time around Perth. You must have had fun exploring the subject matter.
I really did. I spent a lot of time driving around, actually, the streets. As you know, it sort of hugs the coastline from Frio up to Perth, and then there's a part in the Pilbara there, which I travelled to with my dad as well. It was so much fun. It was so much fun.
The little words I just read out, My Dad's Story of Addiction, Resurrection, Dumb Luck and Love, really does break the different parts of the story down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a sad story in many places. I found myself blubbering, Georgia. Was I meant to?
Yes. Well, he's lived a hell of a life. I think that absolutely spurred me on to write his story in the first place. Some of the things that he experienced and lived through, you know, just seems like something out of a movie. So it was an emotional experience hearing from him. There were some stories, of course, you grow up and your dad repeats the same story over and over. So there were many that I already knew, but there were some that were a complete surprise to me. And even probably a surprise to my dad, reflecting on some things that he might never have before. Amazing, and an amazing time in history. And another reason I wanted to write it was because, you know, things like how prevalent heroin was in Perth, for example, in the 70s and 80s, I don't think really has been delved into so much in public discourse or in literature. So,
well, that's a big part of the book. Your father has a childhood where after a while he's really living on his own as a young kid.
Yeah.
Even before he's the age of 15, when he's very much on his own. And for people with my sort of life experience, we always had your parents around you, that is something you can sort of hardly imagine. And then there's the question of drugs, and there's the question of addiction, which actually leads to a period of imprisonment. And then it's after that, the things that happened to him and meeting your mother and football seems to dominate this story in many ways. Georgia, what's that all about?
Well, I mean, it's the Western Australian experience, obviously. But my dad is a huge footy fan, as am I. Grew up watching and my brother playing football is part of the culture, I suppose, in our family, but broader in Perth itself. I think it starts with the Waffle Grand Final. Claremont lose and granddad's not happy, and I just think it's a nice through line through the book that no matter where dad is, he finds a football community.
And the Tigers, the Claremont Tigers, a mainstay in the story in one sense. Your father had to be happy, obviously, for the story to be told, and he obviously wanted to encourage you to write it. Why do you think that was so? How did that come about?
Well, I think it's twofold. Growing up, my mum actually transcribed my great-grandmother's story, Gar, who's mentioned quite frequently in the book as she raised
your dad. Your namesake.
Yes, absolutely. Georgina May Taylor was her name. And so it was funny. I sort of grew up with my mum sitting at the computer, different floppy disks filled with text of Gar's story. So it was sort of a family tradition, really, to write a story like that. So I think that's what led Dad to, from a young age, say to me quite frequently, "You'll write my story one day." And this was before I even knew what his story was. And I've always loved writing. So I was always writing my own little stories and reading a lot as a kid. So clearly he thought that I would be the right one to do it.
He seems, the way the story is told, to have been very fond of and perhaps in many ways protected by Gar and his grandfather. And the relationship with his mother seems both sort of distant and perhaps difficult.
Yeah, it's been an interesting thing to reflect on. I think he didn't realise the impact that his parents' divorce at such a young age had on him and his siblings. And that common theme of sort of displacement and, his mother firstly going to Port Hedland and then later to, is it Wildcatcher Memora? But, traveling around with my granddad who was a policeman, so.
Wildcatcher?
Yes.
The town I know.
Wiley.
Well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that maybe he hadn't reflected too much on the impact it had for him until we sort of went through the story together. So, I mean, Joss, her name is, love her. She's still in our life. I love my grandmother, and I think that comes quite clearly through the book. I've dedicated the book to her, and I talk about my relationship with her towards the end, but there definitely is a common theme of, children and their grandparents having this deeper connection and then perhaps a more fraught relationship between the children and their parents.
It does, and it's a very interesting comment, observation you make. Grandparents feel so fondly towards their grandchildren, and of course the parents' job's a slightly different one, a stricter one, and dealing with the tough times and so on. In your own case, when did you discover that you wanted to be a writer? Because I think you went to Curtin and did creative writing, did you not?
Yes. So, as I said before, I've always been interested in writing, and it was just a sort of hobby for me growing up. I just liked it, and I found it fun, and it was a good way for me to sort of escape, I suppose. And then for a while I was interested in journalism. I wanted to be a sports journalist and, commentate the AFL. And then...
not too late.
You never know. Never know. I loved Christy Malthouse, Mick Malthouse's daughter. Wanted her job really badly. But anyway, so I sort of always wanted... I thought journalism was the way to do it, I suppose, as a job. And then as I ended, year 12, and then I saw that creative writing was an option at Curtin, I changed my my application and put that number one. So the rest is history.
As I implied earlier or said, you find all these intersections in the book, the people who know Perth and they know the period of time that you've covered and explored and brought into the book and your father's commented upon. It covers so many things. You've got a grand final happening there. You've got Fremantle Prison suddenly appears somewhere else. You've got Marine Parade in Cottesloe. You've got shared houses with young boys. You've got people surfing. And you've got this drug culture. Can we go back to that? Because I was as surprised at seem to be as open and as widespread as how you've described it. And I gather from what you've said, you were a bit surprised as well.
Yeah, it did shock me a bit, I suppose, growing up, that heroin is, such an untouchable, the worst drug, ever, and certainly has never been around my circles. And it's not something that you think that would touch your family or quite close. But funnily enough, since this experience, a lot of people have opened up to me, my dad's generation, that they tried it at a party in the early 80s or, you know, they knew a family member who overdosed, etc. So yeah, I think it was a lot more widespread than people understand, especially in the music community and the surfer community. And I think we've gone through a long time where people didn't really talk about it. They didn't talk about, I mean, silence is pervasive in a lot of, I mean, that's another theme of the book, I suppose. And I think generations haven't really reflected on how it was so pervasive and how people were treated, you know, as criminals rather than addicts, as a health issue, etc. So, yeah, it did surprise me at first, and then now it seems to make a lot more sense to me, given, you know, things like methamphetamines and how pervasive that is in society these days. I suppose this was just...
It was the drug.
The meth of the 80s. Yeah.
What I also like about the way you've devised the book to make it more than just a mere memoir is to take us into the future, to move us sideways, to jump when you need to be brief when it's appropriate. But there's this character, Charlie, and his girlfriend, Susie, who are there, and you're not quite sure. They're just being parachuted in some mythical way for a while, and then you think there's something going on here. This is something of a biography, but it's not just that, is it? It's a story about real people and real events. I'm guessing there might be some names in the book that have been changed to protect the innocent, but a lot of them aren't. And at the very end, you provide a whole lot of notes to inform people about Charlie, who it seems he and Susie were important people to your father when he was a young teenager, really.
Yeah, and they were his support system in a lot of ways, and that is how I begin the book, is essentially Dad's on parole and is in a tough spot. He gets into a car accident, which isn't his fault. He wasn't, you know, drunk driving, but he shouldn't have been driving because he was on a suspended license, and the first person he thinks to talk to is Charlie. He's a mentor to him at this point. He's a friend and a trusted person in his life. And yeah, I thought that sort of said it all for me as to how close their relationship was. But in reality, this was his drug dealer.
Your father goes through all of that, as we say. He goes to prison. He meets people in prison who, again, to people of a certain age. Names are mentioned, Archie Butterley, which everybody knows. He keeps meeting people. It's like some of those novels which are entirely mythical. People write all the key events of the 20th century and write a novel around them. But this is sort of happening to your father through his teenage years, into his, you know, up till he meets your mother, which I'm guessing is sort of in the 30s, in the Pilbara. And then there's this moment of redemption in the book. It's beautifully presented. There's a line where you write, he's saying, or you're thinking that he's thinking, that's what it was, redemption. And this is asked after he's asked if he can write some sort of testimonial for the kid that's got caught up in the law. It's a really interesting moment. How do you think your father thought at that point?
Yeah, I suppose shame is a key driver for him, or a factor in how he feels. I think he is so ashamed for ending up in prison, for ending up an addict, which I think is a common experience with anyone who's had issues with substance abuse. It's easiest to blame yourself, and harder to think about, you know, you're a victim of circumstance in a lot of situations. So I think that point where his experience was going to benefit somebody else, like it didn't just exist to be a part of shame for him. It was a learning experience that he could utilize to help somebody else's life. I think that was the like such a turning point for him to be comfortable with his past?
The book, as I suggested earlier, is broken down, well, into three parts, and I have to say it works well. But the other thing that comes through consistently is that your father always seemed to have somebody who was looking out for him. If it wasn't Charlie and Susie, even though there was something of a business relationship there, I suppose, there was Lois, North from Mantle, who's son, I think, was a friend of his, and he sort of he was able to leave his things and be there. At one stage she reminds him that there's a whole lot of mail to be collected, but he doesn't collect it. He takes the Italian approach. You just ignore the bills and the fines and the traffic infringements, and you get on with your life. Although I think he even had a little bit of time in jail because he hadn't paid his fines.
That's right. Yeah.
Very brave approach to life, but there is this notion. And do you think he always felt it, that he had to deal with this addiction? He had to get over that part of his life?
Yeah, I don't think the reality of it really hit him until, you know, as you see in the book, that he gets busted, as he says. But he absolutely had a lot of people looking out for him. That is, you know, friends and older, you know, Pope is a key sort of mentor for him and someone he relies on, Sam, who ends up moving up to the Pilbara after him. There's a lot of amazing friendship stories there as well.
Sam is one of the most intriguing characters, if we can call him a character, in the book, because he usually enters as a one-liner. He turns up. He is at the beach. He gets your father down into the surf. He arrives to play football in Gambia. What was the thinking of how you use this person in the book?
He's fun. I think he is sort of quite, in many ways, a contrasting figure to my dad.
Like, he's the straight guy in most respects.
Yeah, absolutely. He's athletic and
well, your father studious. would probably want to contest that with his football prowess and winning a grand final.
He loved footy, but he was absolutely always playing the resis or the thirds rather than in contention to play for Claremont, like Sam. But yeah, I think he, you know, reflected a lot of what Dad wanted to be back on him, and mainly was just really kind to him.
Apart from the addiction, apart from the inevitability, in a sense, of being caught at his level of a drug trade, if you go high enough up, the popular thinking is those people never get caught, and you in some ways, outside the book, in your notes at the end, talking about the Italians and the drug trade in Perth, reflect on that proposition. Were there things that, apart from the prevalence of drug use and drug movement at the period you're talking about in the book, were there other things that you discovered and sort of took your breath away as you did your research?
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of a bit of a deep dive into sort of, funnily enough, the racism and colonialism, which I think is very important to the history of Perth. And I do reflect on that at my notes at the end. But a big part of the story, obviously, is Fremantle Prison and incarceration more broadly. And I think it's impossible to divorce that from the overrepresentation of Indigenous people in incarceration, that still Western Australia is the worst in the country for that. The violence and deaths in custody that happens in prisons, and also Rottnest, which is a huge part of this. As my granddad was policeman at Rottnest, and Dad's 21st birthday was there. That sordid history with our, you know, colonial past, where, you know, Aboriginal Australians, Noongar people were used as slaves essentially to build prisons there, and then were in them from there. So I thought that was important to touch on in this, and that kind of feeling of incarceration and imprisonment and the flow-on effects of colonialism, I think, is absolutely the backbone of the book.
And there are places when I like your touch, you might call it a light touch, but you make the point that Sam gets abused on the footy field.
Mm.
And there's all, most all there is, there's some humour in what happens to the abuser in the footy match. So it is nicely structured, nicely balanced, nicely told. There's one thing that I'm totally intrigued by, though, Georgia. There's someone who was colloquially known, I think, around the traps as the Silverhead Bodgie, a fellow whose name was Bob Hawke, who pops, and I think that's probably the right expression, up at least twice in this book. Tell me, what's that all about?
Politics is another sort of through line of the book. I work in politics now, and my sort of political awakening happened talking to my dad about the union movement and his experience, industrial relations and social justice and the Labour Party. And I think that's important to Dad's redemption as well, is that he finds purpose in collectivism and the union movement. So I think Bob Hawke being president of the ACTU at the beginning of the book is a nice sort of tie into what was happening in the country at the same time. And I think the sort of hijinks of the unions in the Pilbara around that first boom, it's such an interesting thing to me, and hearing those stories is such an interesting thing to me, because after Hawke and then Keating's leadership, the union movement got decimated up there, and they don't really have much by way of representation in mines anymore.
Well, enterprise agreements arrived on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
The collective bargaining became a more complicated thing, and those questions of industrial justice certainly flow through rather nicely in your father's position on that. And how did you work out how you were going to write this? I mean, I've said a couple of times now, it's not someone's memoir, but your father speaking in a sense in the first person in some of the places. It's not quite a biography, because you're not doing the usual thing. It's certainly not a hagiography. How do you describe the book?
I say it's the Crown style version of my dad's story.
all based in truth.
Yeah.
But there might be some fiction.
Yeah, there might be some conversations that have had to be imagined. And as you sort of said before, Sam as a character, I absolutely formed these characters based on real people, and a lot of them are pretty accurate. What happened on the footy field to Sam, for example, is a complete retelling of a real story that was told to me not that long ago, and I found quite funny. Sad and funny.
Not an isolated incident.
No.
I imagine. I had one quibble. One of the coaches was recalling a footballer who lost his contact lenses on the field. It was always said that it was Barry Biffin playing for East Fremantle on the outer wing at East Fremantle Oval. But I'm sure there's more than one footballer with contact lenses. Did you, after your father sort of had insisted by the sound of it for some time you had to be the one to write the story, how did you go about actually formulating you were going to take this style? You were going to bring Chambers into the story in the way that you did, and and get to that particular style, the Crown style, in writing the book?
So The Shark Net was definitely an influence. I think that was such a beautiful memoir and really well done. And it, you know, tells the personal but a top cultural sort of context and history of Western Australia. So I liked that as, you know, as a model, I suppose, before I started anything. And then how I did it, I firstly just interviewed Dad, and I made the decision to make it purely his perspective. So I didn't interview anyone else. And from that, did a bit of research, you know, as you've seen in the notes in the back, and then started writing. And just, you know, in the form of that writing process, I sort of split up every chapter served as a short story to me. And, you know, that, as you've seen, they're separated by place. So I just put myself in each place and then wrote it. And after having all Dad's story laid out, at first I actually had the historical chapters in between, but that was a bit jarring. When I had Dad's story laid out, and it just felt like there was another voice that was missing, and I decided at that point to sort of delve into a bit more of the, as we said, the Crown, the fictional space around Charlie's experience, and then bring his experience back up as a contrast to Dad's, because really they started in similar places on either side of the Swan River, and which deviated wildly by the end of their lives.
Which sort of leaves this question hanging, which is posed in various ways. It's a story, it says on the back cover of the book, in which living is just a game of chance. Why did Grant Tree survive when others didn't? Why was he the one lucky enough to spill his story to his daughter so that she could record the whole beautiful, unlikely mess of it? They're two related good questions.
Mm.
Perhaps there are simply no answers, but you know your father, you've researched this book, you've written it. You've had to reimagine in many ways for yourself the circumstances in which he grew up, the difficulties he was faced with, the risks and choices made. How come he survived when so many didn't? There was a passage I should just add, which really took my breath away, and I imagine yours, where you write, or he says that he can count on two hands the number of people who he knew, friends and acquaintances, who were taken by heroin.
Mm-hmm.
How was he so lucky?
I think that's it. It's luck, it's chance. I think that's something that has become clearer to me the older I get, that some things happen by accident, by complete chance, and there's not really much you can do about that. Absolutely, you can. I think it's really important for people to live their best lives, so to speak, and do good things and help other people. And I think that's what my dad has done in his life. But you know, people are born into circumstances that they can't control. People are born with privileges and without privileges, and that's luck of the draw. There is nothing you can do about that. You can try and be a good person as much as possible, but, you know, people begin this life in completely different circumstances, and there's nothing we can do about that. And death is quite the same.
What did your dad think about the book?
I think he likes it. He's still quite, you know, as you can imagine, it's been a whirlwind, and I think he's still in shock probably about the fact that a lot of people are now reading his story.
It's one thing to want your story told, it's another thing then to see it out there.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. But, you know, he wanted me to write his story, so here it is.
It's beautifully told. As I said earlier, there are bits in it that will make some of the readers, like me, blubber a bit. It's a classic story in a sense of redemption, someone who worked hard, meeting your mother, making a life together, you and your brother come along and you have all these values instilled in you, and your father will be very proud of that. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.